Mr. Scott, real name. You were on leave in Tokyo, Japan. What happened to you then, after that?
Well, we came back. Just one thing I just forgot. We went out with the quarter, which I think I mentioned, the golden quarter. But the plane we came back on was a big empty Globemaster. The first one we've ever seen carried sanction or things like that. So that was a big difference from going out. We came back to the base camp. I forget the name of that camp now.
Casey Camp.
Yes.
Casey Camp.
We came from there, right back in the line. The tunnel was in the line when we came back. But I was only back in. About 10 days, and I knew the group number, the group number was coming up, 5112, that's the number you're going to find out, at least and it was up on the stuck on a tree outside the dugout, they brought the seahorse out to headquarters, company headquarters, whatever, went there, and told me that I'd be pulling out the following day, and there was several other names from different companies who were coming up at the same time, so that was me. Say me farewell to the landscape if they knew it was staying out, which was a funny thing, you didn't want to leave somehow you got bound, it was queer. It may seem silly saying that, but I thought, oh, maybe you know the lads by dying out there, and put the lads up there, go to your hall and have your band and things like that. All went through your mind.
Well, that would be the second hill you were on at that time. Which I think was 0.210, I think. Did anything happen in the 10 days you were there?
No, it was all... I could honestly say it was a lot of static work. Patrols. Funny enough, if I remember correctly, the Black Watch had a lot of trouble with the seats on the hook when they were doing the and the jungle riders. And we were sent to the left of them, or to the right. And many a time I've ever said to South America, can't we go in and help out? Well, you know, you could see down the position, see what was going on, type of thing. We went out to work, naturally, and you know, it was time to go in positions. But we're so carried up, at least, I don't know, we could see what was going on. Yeah.
And the positions on this hill were similar to the way you'd been.
The same, yeah.
And the same conditions of living.
And winter conditions, as I've said, were absolutely atrocious. But as I said, the golden game got the news flashing back out to that. Weaponry in Korea, I thought was disgraceful. Yourself when you saw the Australians having the sea shape and that building, the old building and the old landfill type of thing. Yeah.
You mentioned some time ago on one of the other tapes that you had Korean porters.
Yeah.
I know we did talk about the fact that they got infiltrated, but what job were they doing for you?
Water carrying, basically. I never saw them, but I think we're still involved in carrying ammunition. I don't know about that, but I never saw anybody.
So you weren't, you didn't see them with work?
We'd see them down below doing the work and coming up with that, but we'd always been in the line.
So it must have been quite an important role they had, getting stuff up to you.
Oh, they were great. We had a couple of youngsters, like orphans, who... You sort of tried to adopt, type of thing. You couldn't be in the line, but when you're up the line, you're talking very strong. Not being doing anything, but they come up for a group of things like that. Not many of them, but you see them. And I think that's one of the things that I know of maybe some bring us in the way. But when I think of, we went out there to help them, the South Korean people, and now, industry wise, they can be buying things off them. And they have their own industry, so I'm a little bit.
Did you have any South Korean troops attached to you at all?
The ROKs, the ROK, the Republic of Korea, that was the name, the ROKs, I think the ROK, the Republic of Korea troops. Well, I don't even know how many in the old battalion, but it was not mixed with the Americans, and it could have been previous to us going out there, because when GLI went out, I think I didn't mention it, but some of the regiments who were really very rough when they first started up. The Guards, the Middlesex, the Thumb Fusiliers, the KSLI, things like that. They were having, what I would say, battles. And not so much that, it was you were up in that. And, but I think the Commonwealth Division as a whole, they could have been better. And even some of the old chaps who had been in Vietnam 45 who went out there, So the National Service got as good a start as anybody. Not better.
You didn't see any cruelty by South Koreans or North Koreans that they'd taken?
No.
Saw nothing of that nature.
I think as we mentioned, the only time I saw what I thought was a big cruelty, little fact was the Princess Patricia, like when he's up, he deserted something, we were going to land, he was in his pen, and he was tamping down his arms, like a shorts on, and he was waiting to go back to Canada for sentence. But that was the thing I was saying.
You didn't know of any people in your company, squad, whatever, who didn't come up to scratch, didn't they?
In my platoon and section or whatever, even a company, plus somebody else, I think your company's the best one. Mm. I think as a battalion went up there, it was a great battalion.
Who took Donoghue's place when he was killed?
If anybody would be one of the lieutenants was there, but I just can't remember the whole time who it was. Really, you didn't see much of the company commander. Only when he got a special thing, which unfortunately he made the Donoghue, they were starting to come the HQ. So they were more administering the type of less things that happened than the building back lane. I can't remember where to go from.
And there's nothing you say in the 10 days that you were on the hill at the end that you can recall it was different from what had happened before?
There could have been things after that, but I don't know. One thing was, I can remember, it's a bit of a obviously not comical, but we've got one second lieutenant came up there, and I think his name was Hennessy, and he was related to the Hennessy Lion people. And I know we were in his billet one day, and I can remember saying to myself, and there was another lad there, and he said, look at this, he just had a letter. And he's complaining about his allowance from home. And it was £3,000 or something. He said, that's no good to me, that, he said. He said, so that's why I came and joined the army. He said, they haven't increased it. And I also had that conversation, and he's really coming from getting an army pay, you know, he's talking like that. And he wasn't there very long. I don't know what happened. It was just one day with transfer. I don't know what happened. But that was his name, Hennessy. And so he said, relate to the Lion people, the Hennessy people. But he did read that out in his envelope.
So most of the officers were well connected?
That was awesome. We were constant time. I don't remember the shooting people. Credit to the troopers on that tour thing. I don't know whether he was or not. But then there was the salvage. That name was about storage. You know, I don't know what he was involved. I would think it's kind of, not saying about the AMs, you know, things like that, but they're well educated people and that, you know. Not that we weren't, because I mean, some of us, we could talk to them as they spoke to us. But I must admit, all the officers in Berlin were bull officers, the one who went up there, they were the last.
What was your army pay at the end of your service?
I couldn't remember. I'd be like, not very much. Was it £3? It wasn't much. As you said, when we come home, that would be a bit later on. But it wasn't much.
So you're... Demob number was posted, you said, and you saw it. Yeah, what was the routine of moving then? How did they move
well,
you?
Well, it was straight back to the base camp, as you would say, out of the line, the best camp, once you went out. So we knew the routine to get there, I mean, took the way around. We were there 2 days, getting what they called posters. But if I remember rightly, which I did show you the discharge papers and that, they were all ready for me. I went to the scene with Lieutenant Colonel Jeffries. I think each man did, and who I did, understood, you know, everything, was a gentleman. And after that release, it was sent back, went from there, to Tucson. It was all quick, we were like, bother, we were getting out of it, you know. Tell our lads, you know, not really that in a nasty way, but, you know. And went there, Tucson, Därför tog han till Kuri. Kuri kamp, that was a nice camp, it was a nice camp. We were there, well, we were only going there 3 or 4 days, but I don't know what happened. I never found out, we were there nearly 10 days, because we went in our uniforms and that, which were the best 8 days, and we got them on the kit, but they were kept back there, so that year, the good year, was kept, and it was issued to us. So we spent our time building out again, type of thing, keeping so occupied, and just a question of, because it wasn't there, militarized, and we were going home, so it didn't mean what it was like, you know. It was quite a nice place, you know, with the going up around there. And then it was a question of waiting for the troop ship to come, the HMT Delaware, which was originally for officers, you know, to go. And it was a fair bit of one to go out in the trooper, because that was what you wanted to do, that was everything. And they said that we had cabins, because it was for officers, they had cabins. But it was horrendous there and coming back. I don't know whether I'm going too far ahead. The first thing up to me, going up on the tow ship, was an RSM through the top. It was an Air Force RSM, right to the corporal. He said, are you a war substantive? I said, what do you mean? He said, did you 7.9.45? I said, no. He said, he should have gone back down. He was looking at me, that wouldn't I? So I said, no, if you want to take the strength down, which you get on board. I said, what for? And then Sammy, Cookie Sam's really stepped up. He says, don't argue, soldier. So I said, no, I said, let me know what for. I said, I'll do nothing wrong. I'm not going to charge anything. And he said, oh, well, he said, you're not more substantive, you're not on the strike. So I thought it was pointless argument. And I was annoyed about that because I think they were signing on. I didn't see the slaughter, but that's in mind altogether. I said, no way. Because it's going to start off with one strike, you know, I said, no way, no. I thought, maybe if you're good enough to go up the line and whatever, yeah. And they took a strike, I said, no, thanks. So I took it down, so I came back to play with it. Yeah. I thought, well, that wouldn't be shabby anyway. There was some of the black watch guys coming home, the mixer coming home. There was all sorts coming home, there was ATS guys and all this and that on the boat. Because they got the posh, the really posh end of the boat. And it was segregated naturally, there was a guard on it. The thin red line, you used to call it, you know. So we couldn't go through. We could mix them at night time in the nappy partnership. But it was for 4 days, the bay, we were back and doing the night for the weather. And my party was the galley party. It was like slave labour. The sweat, the heat, you couldn't go up on deck. So we got through that.
So what date would this be?
That was, I got home in June, so that would be coming home the beginning of May, because we're 45 weeks down to sit there. May. Yeah, May. Then we back at the beginning of May.
1953.
And then the Black Watch lads, I thought they took them really bad, you know, because they'd been through it in the back of the hook and were really through it, some of them. And I got talking, we'd been born in Scotland, and you got talking about it. And some of us saw, you know, what really did happen. No way could see what's going on, but, you know, actually, you know, I had it all sorts of places there. And I've never been seasick to that. The last day of that 4 days, I didn't realize these things could be so bad. And everybody was. Well, you can imagine the swelling up board. No fresh air, it absolutely swelled.
In what ways did they treat the Black Watch badly on the boat? You
I thought they said that they're off lightly. You know what I mean? Don't imagine that. But I mean, I went on the boat the same thing, right? I'm going to have not a luxury cruise, anything like that. But I'm going to make an answer that we could. It was a duty for everyone who's at the door. You were galley, or you were mopping up, or you were. There was, yeah. We might as well have been a Mercenary ship. That's a bit of a little trip out of us. The only good thing was it was all cabins. Yeah.
So you're sleeping in a cabin?
In a cabin, yeah. Which that was only a good thing. And if you get away, as soon as the little portals that were back inside. So then playing for all you. One way that only in country was probably a record player. And he was playing back once that he had a couple of the old quite bad music in that. We had a couple of takes that you went into. That was how you could do it. Kill the time on me.
There was basically duties and then just duties lying around.
Around, yeah. Coming back, and we come to the shows. If I remember right, I'm sure the boats had been sunk. No. But you couldn't pass each other, you had to go to lay by. Remember, you couldn't lay by. Then the one should have passed the new came out and went forward. But it was on, because the Benbulls might have done there, in case the Egyptians started something, the Benbulls might have done the beach, or on the side, going through. And we couldn't, like, going out, you shout to the bomb boys, you know, they're the floating and stuff like that. Yeah. But this time there was no, especially in the air, going through it, we went out there, we thought it was all watching, so we got through it. So we got nothing. Even at night time, so we got through, we couldn't do anything. And we were fighting, you know, standing up again, type of thing. We remember, we were all wrong, not loaded, but no, just in case. Yeah. And then, that was the question when we got into Dr. Southampton. And that was when we realized it was us all over. And the biggest disappointment of my whole army service for the 2 year national service took place. We got to the train, that's the same as we went from up to down. So we saw down the King's Cross, we changed the King's Cross. As soon as the party, there's 12 of us. I think it was 12 of us. The two Cornish lads, which I thought was stationed, they could let them go straight up, not let them come back up. As we thought, they'd be actually demobbed at Dunsford Camp. Get the train, there was a fussy journey, and I don't, there was an officer who was from the other regiment, and he was going to soon go up to the Dunsford. He brought in the regiment, or soon as we were up, I don't know exactly what, but he was inside the back. We got to Dunsford camp, door shoot down, and nothing left. Not that day, and the officer was disgusting. He said, well, that's a right welcome, come on back. And the other two of us said, well, thanks very much. And he said, very lads. He said, get yourselves home. He said, I'll take responsibility. He said, yeah, well, we were on the way. I mean, they thought it was superstitious. It was all shut down, no cookers, nothing, not a thing. No guard, nothing. All gone. Yeah.
The whole camp was shut down.
The whole camp was shut down with nothing. And we got there. We went back, he kept us there, he went back to the other place, the castle. Because there were some officers in there. And we was over there for a little bit. So he came back, he said, right, lads, just to get yourselves home.
Do you remember his name, the officer?
I can't remember his name. He was a stranger. He was going there for some documentation or something, but he'd been put inside the whole party because he was going from down the south. So, of course.
He hadn't been to Korea with you, he just picked you up in the south of England.
He'd been put inside the party. He didn't know any of us, we didn't know him. Yeah.
So you went home, and that must have been quite a moment when you walked in the house.
Before I went home, I'll tell you this, we saw the rifle for this, the kit bag. And when we got there, the bus was so late, the bus station was closed. Now, when we were living in Thornaby, which is, there was a big construction company used to have a van, a lorry with a big dome at the back. I knew it used to go to Sesame Street three times a day. And one of them was coming home at 12 o'clock at night. 12 o'clock used to travel, and he used to come through Thornaby. So I thought, oh, I wonder if we'd catch him. So I walked all the way to outside of this big roundabout. A telephone box there, but by then I was shattered. I got in the telephone box and said, I'll sit down here. And I heard this lorry come running thing, and luckily for me it was him. And I stopped in the road to pull me up. And he knew me because I'd worked at Prentice next door to the meantime. And he said, right, get in. And he took me up to the door. My mother didn't have the clothes coming because it matched. I couldn't phone anything. Well, more than all type of thing, you know. And that was me home. And then the officer said he'd leave word with the Bransford Castle to what he'd do, how he'd wear. And he said, I want you, we have to phone up to let them know what we were to do, what our next thing was to do. And they just told us to go and report to them, I had to go to Light Street, which was a Royal Artillery, which for me was absolutely crazy. Light Infantry, go to Royal Artillery, it's here. and in a sad state, but he walked down that under room, says, saying, glory to you. Yeah. So I went, I reported down there after the 14 days of the
leave.
Leave. Went down there, handed my documents to her, and they enrolled me in the Army Emergency Reserve type of thing, and all this and that. They said, well, what did you do? And I said, well, I was an infantry man, like infantry. No, you're not much good for the officer. I said, well, they sent me here. He said, I don't know. He said, I'll tell you what might be useful. He said, if you be handy, which is where the brain gun, and I said, yeah. He said, I was somewhere with my instructor. I said, I'm not an instructor officially. He said, oh, yeah, but he said, if it's doing about this money to put it together, he said, that would do me. I mean, they were sets like that. Naturally, different altogether. So I ended up, while I was stationed there for the TA service, they just be stuck with a brain gun. Yeah. But, I had to go, we went out to Salisbury Plains for the Cessnite practice. I had to go to Cessnite, that was all Cessnite practice down there.
So when you'd finished your national service, in effect, you then had to do territorial army service. Yeah. This is what you're saying. So you hadn't actually been demobbed as such?
No, you'd 3 years here, and then I think it was 5.5 years after that, the Army Emergency Reserve, where you could still be called up. I think it was an age limit, I think we're up to 45 or something, you could be sent to war. But prior to that, up to 45, you could be sent anywhere. You know, if there was something to happen. I think I've still got the documents in there. So, and we worked it out on. But my brother, he was there, he was in the army in Hong Kong. And he worked at more similar time when I was in. And we'll still be eligible for some sort of service up to about 55 or 58. Yeah. So, in actual fact, we really weren't fishing out of it altogether. Forget about it, you know.
So when you in effect left the full-time army, you would start your civilian work again, did you?
Yeah, I went back to.
But you had this territorial army,
yeah.
And was that one meeting a week that you had to do?
It was in fact, a lot of trouble in them days, and I was going to work into it, but usually overtime, and it was actually the third day. Well, the Leighton Street, one night was the overtime night. It was Monday and Thursday. Well, just come out of the army, I had no money. Now, which is good for my mother's sake as well. This is what I come into it, is the kind of money, which I just said earlier on. When I come home, you've got credits, it's just taken out your pay, army pay. And you had to go to your nearest post office branch, hand over there, the book and turn the credits on, hand it over to them, and they will send off and they will let you know when to go collect the credit money. And to this day, I'm still with the credit money, but I've had no more. So, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know about any of the course of the money that lands off. Yeah. As I said, mother said, all right, man, there's money being stocked up. Plus the fact that I was sending money home extra out of the what bit you got to give a little bit of money, and got nothing. Never seen about that. Nobody come back to us anything. We kept going out to the post office. We either had book right from Stockton, he used to go to the Stockton post office, the same applied to him. Not a penny, yeah. So we ripped off that way as well. But then, going back to the factory, which was the British Titan at Billingham, with me serving my time, they were guaranteed a job for the year, I think it was, that they'd take you back, no matter where you were. Well, it took me, I would say, about a year to get back into the swing of things. But the TA camps, they were laughable. You said if we went to Salisbury, the first time we went, they took us a lorry. But you can imagine if we went to Salisbury, it was torture. So somebody said, well, can't we go if we have our own cars? So that was agreed, right. Put us on trust to get there. Well, unfortunately, we broke down the first time we set off in the same country. So got halfway down there, and this bus come past us. We stopped the bus, ready to go. Salisbury, could you take us? But we had the kit, that's what we put your kit there. And he said, we explained what happened. But it was in the middle of the road, the car. Thinking, not in no man's land type of thing, but there was no garages. He said, I don't know, he said, the first stop, he said, I'll phone, by the chap, the bus, going up to make sure it's all right. And the cover fell was that way. That was the first time. We didn't do that again because I stopped the cars after that. We went back in the lorry.
So your Korean, obviously, time and your national service time was over. Looking back on it all, what was your worst? What was the worst about Korea?
The winter. Yeah.
And it was exceptionally cold, which we've got on the tape, of course. Yeah.
Eddie O'Brien. That was one of the worst.
And how he was close to you, was he?
Well, Eddie was in the same platoon, and you know, he knew his son. Everybody was in this platoon, he knew everybody. And when he got killed, I think it shocked, you know, a lot of us realised that, you know.
How was he killed?
Business. Well, if I remember right, he was killed in a motor, dropped through the night. Murphy Hall, if I remember rightly, he was killed playing grenades, if I remember rightly, down the hill before he went about 3-5-5. And those are the things that stuck in our trouble up there. Let us know that it was war. And also, I've mentioned before, the other thing was, when we changed over the line that first night, not knowing it when it's back, bucketing down, your poncho is stuck over your shoulder, and as you say, you pull from your mouth, and you keep going in your own. And that was things that stuck in your crop.
And the best part of Korea, of your Korean experience?
Well, the best part of Korea for me was two good pals, one I've kept in touch with all the years, the other, which I still work with, just writing. Made some good friendships. But also, I must mention again, those ladies who sent us the parcels up there, magnificent.
Did you meet Australians?
Met Australians in Tokyo.
Oh, you didn't meet them in the line? Well, I was going to ask, you know, what? Yeah. How did you find them? What were they like?
Oh, I had a dinner to this. There was a major. I don't know what his name was, came up in the Australian Army. And he was talking to the three chaps in the boat. It was on Third Army, I think, or Australian Army. And he left them, and we were like the rear slope, the forward slope, was where the good one, the rear slope. Which I talked to, he came up and he seemed to talk to some of the lads. But oh, yeah, that's very good, you know, me, said something, you know, stage, yeah. Anyway, he'd gone. One of the chaps came over and he said, I might give that a thought. Has he been to see you? I said, no. And the lad said, what was it about? He was on a rose in the army, he was with the Croton, for Del Monte, the fruit company. It's in fruit or something, yeah. He was a Croton. When he finished, he fancy a couple of steel, you know, talking that.
The Americans?
The Amsterdam did say that. The two of one company took over. There were only a couple of days ago, I don't know what happened. We've got a young top shot, I think I said it.
Yes, with his gun.
The gun was turned over the gun as well. It's your go. But I must admit that the Yanks were far better equipped than us in a lot of ways. Yeah. But I wouldn't say fighting wise. I don't know what I mean, that, but I think we're just a teacher.